Mr. Clarkson, reel 12.
And go on to living accommodation and the quality and the condition and the actual living, what it was like. What was it like to be in a fairly big ship, or even a destroyer, in fact? What was the mess life like, and how did it vary between ships, as you can remember, if it did?
Well, it was very inadequate to start with. A mess was a table, two plank stools each side of it, and at the end of the mess you had a small cupboard affair with two drawers in it. One you kept the flour in and the other you kept the tea in, I think. And then you had some mess gear, as they called it. That was tin gear. Now, that mess, when it was normally full, which it was always full, you all had a job to sit down there. Sometimes there were too many and they just had to sit around. Now, they had a system of cooks. Well, say, for argument's sake, the first mess I was in on the fish guard, 25 in the mess. Now, out of those 25, there'd be a leading hand who was the boss of the mess, and the remainder, there were two of you detailed as cooks for a day at a time. That meant that the night before, you were being cooked the next day, the night before, you drew potatoes, peas, anything that was wanted for the next day. You peel the potatoes, you put the peas in soak, and then you started the next morning. Hands to cocoa and wash. You had to nip to the galley to get the cocoa. Then breakfast time. You had to put up the stuff that was for breakfast. The cooks didn't do any cooking. None at all. The cooks only boiled hot water, and they put your stuff in the oven that you brought up, and they took it out when you called for it. That was all they'd done. They never prepared anything at all. But the cook of the mess done that. So then, say in the morning, you took the breakfast up. It might be kippers or anything like that. That was if you're home. And then you went up and wet the tea. You collected the kippers, whatever it was, and you brought it back into the mess. By this time, you'd laid out the knives and forks and everything already. And then they came down to breakfast. As soon as breakfast was over, you had to wash up. And you would imagine washing up 25 lots of greasy plates. You had always had a job to get hot water somehow or other. You had to go to the galley to get that. And then you had to wash up and get the dinner up to the galley. Now, you didn't get any. You had about a quarter of an hour to do that in after the others fell in. And let me see. The meat used to draw from the beef screen. Usually a marine or a naval seaman who was called the butcher. And he cut up the meat. You didn't know what sort of meat you were going to get. And so you'd rush up. You're always in a hurry. You got the meat, and the butcher'd say, "Number 7, miss, here you are." And he'd take a drop kick with it. And you picked it up, and you decided, you had to decide, and you had to learn quickly what to do with it. Whether it would be a straight rush, or whether it would be a stew, or whatever you would do with it. A straight rush, of course. You put it in a dish with the spuds around it and a few onions, and that went up the galley. You never worried about puddings. You never had time. And then if it was a pie, you had to know how to make a pie. Yes. You had some weird and wonderful concoctions there from those of us who just joined. And if it was a case of making a pie, it meant that you had to cut the meat up, put that up to the galley, and then you had to sneak away from your job because you had to fall in about a quarter of an hour after the others and start work. Well, then you went to your boss, if you were a seaman, your captain of your top, or in our case, you go to the chief of button and say, all right, nip down the mess and make a bit of clacker. Yes, so you rush away down the mess, because if you were caught on the mess deck, you were in the wrong. And then you roll out this stuff, made your dough, rushed up the galley, and pleaded with the cook to let you have this. You got a bit of wood with the number of the mess on, tied under the handle. Back again, roll this out, put a lid on it, the clacker, as we call it, and back to the galley. Now then, you were back to work again. And at dinner time, dinner was 12 o'clock. A quarter to 12, the bugle would go then, or a pipe, cooks to the galley. And you went to the galley then, you all lined up in a queue. Number 7, mess, check it out. Number 21. The two cooks carried that away, and they had to cut that up and serve those 25 hungry so-and-sos. And then by the time they'd finished serving that lot out, because you didn't dare, you'd want too much there to be equal proportions. And then you had yours, what was left. And then you kept on saying, come on, lads, get up top. Open the door, go away for smoke, so that you could wash up. You had to wash up then and get that stuff away. And then in the evening, they'd pipe hands in the mess for repayment gear. That was the stuff that you were short of or you hadn't been issued with, and the steward, you went up with a chip in the cater of your mess, and you got whatever it was, a couple of pound of rice or some flour or tea or something like that. Once a week you were issued with repayment gear, so much, very little, and I think you were allowed 8 pence a day for extras. So that bacon, eggs, butter, all that lot were extras. You didn't get supplied with those, but you had 8 pence a day each to buy those. So the caterer, he had a chipbook and he used to write out what we're going to have for breakfast. So many tins of red lead and herrings.
The caterer not being the cook, the caterer.
Oh no, the caterer of the mess. Usually the leading hand of the mess.
I see, right. Yes. Okay, yeah.
And then the cook of the mess had to go down to the canteen and buy that. That was all bought the night before. And that was accredited against the
mess.
Against the mess. Well, the result was you overspent. You had to. And so at the end of the month, the caterer used to have to reckon up how much you were in debt. And you had to put so much in of your own money.
You had to make up the difference.
Oh yes, you had to make up the difference. Now, up till 1930, I suppose it would be, or possibly a little bit before that, that was what they call canteen messing, mm-hmm. which, of course, was an imposition on the consumer there. And then they introduced a scheme of paymaster, general messing, as
general
they call it.
Messing, yes.
The Navy, they joined up more paymasters, cooks. Now, where in a cruiser you'd have had two cooks, a PO cook, and an ordinary or a leading cook, they suddenly developed into six cooks. And they had to have preparing rooms, and the idea was that instead of the caterer getting the 8 pence a day for each of them, the paymaster took all the lot, and then the paymaster fed them. But we were going away to the West Indies. The paymaster would not do that where it couldn't be run properly, you see. At the West Indies, things like butter then were 4 shillings a pound, where they were about a shilling in England. Everything was dear, and so they went back to canteen messing. And so we used to pay out as much as £2 a head in our mess, the 10 of us, a month to make up the... And apart from that, we used to buy a lot of gear, a bit of butter in a bottle, stowed away, all that sort of thing. But we still paid heavily for that. Now you've come back to the depot. That was where the Navy made their money and the paymasters. In a place like the barracks, a big establishment, they got the... it, of course, been increased from eightpence a day for each man then. But even if it hadn't been, their due was, say, in the 114 mess, which was the petty officer's mess in the barracks, there'd be 200 in there. Supper or tea, supper, there would be 180 of those ashore at night. They lived ashore. It was weekends, they'd all be the way, but the paymaster drew the money, and that created canteen funds as well, you see.
Yes.
Now, there was another thing about these canteen funds. That was all to do with the catering. That was canteen funds originally started from when the canteens were run by Lipton's or Miller's. There were several people who used to run, and they used to have the contract money. And the rent that they should have paid, that was the... that made up the canteen funds, which were supposed to be used for sport and all sorts of things.
Yes.
And so when we commissioned the Dauntless, every naval officer is out to get himself promotion, and he wants to do something outstanding. And so we had a lieutenant commander there who, he was after promotion, all right, but he decided we should have a band. Of course, cruisers never had bands then. Bands were bought out of the canteen funds. Now, we commissioned in Portsmouth, and there were just a few of us before the final commissioning. And we were suddenly detailed for... I was canteen committee. I didn't want to be on the committee, but I was detailed on the committee. And the commander would be the... the first lieutenant. He would be the chairman of the canteen committee. So we said, right, we'll have one representing the stokers, one from the artisans, one from the seamen, and so we mustered up there. And he said, now we want a band. We didn't want a band, but he did. And this band is going to cost £350. We will buy the instruments, and we'll get volunteers. If they can't blow a trumpet, well, we'll teach them. We'll get somebody to teach them. And having formed the band, we shall have a band for the commission, and then those who learnt to play the instruments, they can have them, they can take them home with them. And then we shall also want a drum major to lead the band. And so we've got a stoker here who's 6'4". We're sending him up to the horse guards to be trained. All the paraphernalia will have to be bought for him. So we've got to borrow £350 out of the canteen funds, but we haven't got any canteen funds. But they borrowed the money just the same. We didn't agree to it, but he was the chairman, and that was that. And so off we sail
with
the band. Wonderful affair it was.
And did it work? I mean, did it take off? Was it
well,
successful?
Well, it did. It done the Navy good. It done the country good. This band of ours, I looked around for volunteers, those who could blow an instrument. Now, we had chief POs, ERAs, boys, stokers, all the lot. But they all had to wear a sailor's uniform when they were on parade. They look round then for a bandmaster, and they find a fellow who was nearly always drunk, a leading torpedoman from the Vernon, who was coming to the ship. And he knew all about running a band, so he was the bandmaster. Stoker Blake, the 6'4" man, he was sent to the horse guards and trained to throw the mace round. And Everything worked out fine, but we suffered some horrible noises while this lot were practicing when we went away. And eventually they'd done very well indeed. Now you can imagine what it was like if we hadn't had a band. At one place, I think it was Florida, we were at, we'll just use that as an example. There was this band, Church Parade, and there was a church about 3 miles away, I suppose, 3 or 4 miles. And so this was at Tampa in Florida. And so everybody had to go to church party. I normally used to get out of it because we had some religious feel in our mess, but you had to take a turn. And there was me. We'd been ashore the night before, and we were all suffering with fat heads. But we had to go to this service, and the captain, he was going to read the lessons. It turned out to be a good affair. But there was Stoker Blake, this band spread out nicely, going through the main streets. All the Americans turned out to see it. And this Blake, he could chuck that mace in the air over the top of cars and catch it at the other end. It was really impressive.
That was impressive. That also, yeah, something.